Thanks for downloading the Matchbook Betting Podcast, the show dedicated to bringing you betting insights to help you make smarter and more informed bets. I'm Emmett Kennedy, joined by Matchbook's big bet expert, Mr. Jesse May.
Hi, Emmett.
And in terms of smarter and more informed bets, our experts knocked it out of the park last week, Jesse.
We had a great weekend betting. We won nearly every bet, 3 for 3 on the soccer, 3 for 3 on the NFL. And of course, Neil Channing smashed the Breeders' Cup bet. If you got down on that, I have to eat the egg on my face. Scrambled.
We're going to talk a little bit more about that in the.
But
that
was great weekend. But look, you know, it's just hope that's part of the variation. More the same.
Yeah, hopefully. Well, look, we've had a great week. Hopefully, we're going to have an even better weekend this weekend. Not to put too much pressure on Mr. Neil Channing, the Godfather himself.
No, I'm hoping so.
Founder of the Betting Emporium, Mr. Neil Channing. Welcome back to the show.
Oh, hello. Yes, I'm hoping we have an even better weekend. Although I did feel a little bit guilty last week because not that I should. I mean, I mentioned, I believe, that we should back the Indianapolis Colts getting a ridiculously large number of points. And then not very long after we got the podcast out there, of course, there was an injury to the Houston quarterback. So I'm hoping everyone listened quite quickly and got their bets down quite quickly.
We did manage to get about half of it on at I think 13 points, which was incredible.
Yeah, obviously it moved to like sort of 6 and a half.
Now, the truth, I really wanted to ask you about that, Neil, actually, because first of all, it still looked like it might be an incredible bet at around 6.5, or that could be after timing. But I also noticed the money line seemed like that was a really interesting bet.
Well, it's funny actually, because I sort of wasn't sure what to do. A couple of people said to me, I missed it because I didn't listen quickly enough, and should I still bet it? And I don't know, I was in three minds. I mean, obviously, if you say you're watching a horse race and something gets backed in from 2 to 1 into evens, my inclination is normally to say, well, unless the situation has changed in any way, if the only thing that's happened is the price has changed a lot, well, I would probably give it a miss now because that seems like, it's shortened up a lot. But then there's an argument for saying, well, in that situation, well, that might be because the market has information that you're not privy to, inside information. Well, in this American football situation, that clearly wasn't the case. The market had moved because of widely available information that the quarterback was changing for Houston. I don't know.
Right.
Somebody asked me on Twitter, and Brad was very, he replied immediately and said, well, I like them even more now. And he went and backed Indy to win the game as well, just like money line. So I don't know. Maybe I was a bit, it's a temptation to kind of, sort of say, well, I'm all right now. I've done mine. I mean, I can give you a Strictly Come Dancing example, if you like. A friend of mine is on Debbie McGee.
I mean, everything comes back to Strictly Come Dancing.
And it generally does. Well, a friend of mine has backed Debbie McGee to a Strictly Come Dancing at 33-1 or something ridiculous like that. And they texted me this week and said, I hope you got on when I told you. And, you can close out now, 2-1. But, she will win unless she breaks her leg. So I said, well, why would I want to close out a 2-1 if she's still going to win? Do you think she'll win more than 50% of the time? And they replied and said, yes, I think probably yes. So I said, well, shouldn't we press up then at 2-1? And they said to me, no, I'm going to lay at 2-1 because I want to take my profit. And I had to explain that that's completely insane. If you think something's going to happen more than 50% of the time, then you should back it at 2-1.
I agree with your conclusion.
The previous position they had to sway their opinion.
Well, I agree with your conclusion, but I don't think it's the same as the Indianapolis bet. Basically, I think with the Indianapolis bet, what happens is it gets more complicated. I mean, once the second bit of public information comes in and the market moves, you now still have the inherent value that you had originally on the Cleveland side, or excuse me, the Indianapolis side.
Yeah.
But then you have to decide whether the market has reacted normally.
Well, you're right. Yes. Yeah,
I think in this particular case, you could say that the market could have underreacted or it could have reacted fine.
That's true.
But it probably
did. That's true. I take your point. I mean, also, don't forget, we had those conversations, bringing it back to NFL, we had those conversations about Aaron Rodgers the other week. And saying that I can't remember who they were playing that week. Was it the Giants?
That's exactly what I was thinking about.
They'd gone from being we would have expected Green Bay to be about a 6-point favorite over the Giants that week, and then they ended up being a 6-point underdog. And people were saying, well, you know, 12 points for one guy, that seems like a big reaction. And of course, the counter argument to that is to say, look, it's Aaron Rodgers. You know, he is one of the best ever. Hard to make that case, really, for the Houston quarterback, really. And for that line to move 6 points, I don't know. Maybe it didn't feel like the market hasn't reacted
enough.
You're
saying it's a media. You're saying it's a media perception that Deshaun Watson was the entire team.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't know. I mean, it's not like Houston were like a super good passing team anyway. I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure. That's the beauty of it, isn't it? That's when it goes from being science to art, isn't it? That you, it's very hard to put a number on what Deshaun Watson is worth and whether the market overreacted there. I don't know. Brad was very adamant, though. It was an interesting game from a betting perspective, though, definitely.
Well, that is a brief insight into the kind of conversation that Jesse May was having with Mike Carlson, Brad Allen, Nick Goff, and Neil Channing at the Matchbook Traders Conference. You can watch that video at insights.matchbook.com, and indeed, all the other videos from an incredible day in London a couple of weeks ago at the MacBook Traders Conference. We're already looking forward to next year's show. Let's move on to our preview of Week 10. Now, obviously, the big shock on Week 9 was the elimination of Aston. No one thought that he was going to be voted off the show, and now Debbie McGee is 2-1 favorite. Oh, wait, sorry. No, we're talking about the NFL. Oh, yeah, okay, right. So enough of Spooky Come Dancing. So Week 10 of the NFL, the first game we're going to talk about is a game that Neil Channing has specifically highlighted. Basically, it wouldn't be the Matchbook Betting Podcast if we didn't talk about the Cleveland Browns.
I think it's the only game of the week. It is the really big game, as far as I'm concerned. What is Cleveland against the spread this year? Have they actually beaten the spread yet?
That's a very good question.
They're not doing too great against the spread. Hang on, let me tell you. I don't think they have beaten the spread this year.
I mean, they're so bad against the spread that even the people who like to bet on the teams who've never won.
They have beaten the spread. Eight games they've played. They're 2-6 against the spread. So twice they beat the spread. So,
oh, good stuff.
I actually went to the game in Twickenham, which, you know, they've had a bye week last week because they were in Twickenham the week before. They weren't that bad. But they do, I mean, they are Cleveland and they do make, you know, silly mistakes. I felt like for a lot of that game, I felt like they were going to cover, actually, and they were, you know, ultimately quite disappointing. This week, they've had a bye, and they go on the road off a bye to Detroit. Well, the reason I like the game, well, there's a few reasons I like the game. So first of all, then this was something that came up actually at the Traders Conference.
First of all, it's not really called going on the road when you're traveling from Cleveland to Detroit. It's more like going out for a sandwich.
Hop onto the bus.
I wouldn't want to walk it, but you're right. I mean, it's not such a big traveling factor, and obviously they've had a nice long rest. But of course, what happens these days with the NFL with the buys is they get a bit of a holiday because they get 4 days off during the bye week. So it's pretty cool. Lazy old guys. Collective bargaining agreement. But they're traveling to Detroit. Now, one thing that came up on the Traders Conference, which I thought was quite an interesting point that Nick Goff made, which is that people often talk about the look-ahead line. And I must confess, I'm a little bit of a fan of the look-ahead line myself, and I know Brad is as well. I've heard him mentioning it before. So there's one casino in Vegas, the Westgate, what used to be the Las Vegas Hilton. And they put up a line every Wednesday on not the games that are going to take place that Sunday, but the games that are going to take place the following Sunday. You're allowed to bet 1,100 to win 10, and then they might change the prices and maybe you can have another bet. So these prices are not exactly, you know, thrashed into shape by gazillions of pounds, as the NFL line generally is. So Nick was making the point that people talk about these lines as if they're set in concrete, and they're really not. You know, they're an opinion of one guy who works for a casino in Vegas probably most weeks they don't take a bet on most of the games. And even if they did, you can only get a grand on. So we shouldn't take them that seriously. But having said that, they are available. And if there's such a mistake in them, people can have a bet. And Detroit opened up last Wednesday in this sports book, 9.5 over Cleveland. Now, obviously, Detroit had a win since then. Cleveland didn't play. So Cleveland can't get any worse because they didn't play. And Detroit played in Monday Night Football. They were a tiny favorite, a 1.5-point favorite over Green Bay. And they beat Green Bay by 3 points. So, it's not like they... Sorry, by 13 points. What am I saying? 30-17 was the score. So, obviously, they did okay, but they were favourites to win. And there was, the big question mark over Green Bay coming off a bye with their backup quarterback. And I don't think that it was an amazingly shocking result. So the line now in this game is 12.5, Detroit by 12.5. It strikes me that 3 points is quite a lot of a reaction to not really much happening. Detroit are not a very good team to back as a favourite generally. If you take them since 2010 as a favourite, they're 27-31-2. So you'd be behind if you bet them every time they were a favourite. If you bet all 12.5-point favourites and above, in the NFL since 2010, you'd have had 86 bets and you'd had 40 winners and 45 losers and a tie. Actually, I don't know. Oh, sorry. Yeah, I'd say those were 12.5 and above. So obviously some of those would have been possible to get a tie. But the other thing I really like about this, and the reason I quite like Cleveland here, and I'm not saying they're, a great team or anything like that, and they'll probably lose, but, I think they can keep it close. But one thing I really like about this game from a Cleveland point of view is that it's what we call a sandwich game. So Detroit had that big Monday night football game against Green Bay, which obviously is a divisional rival and a Monday night football. It's one of the biggest games of the season for them. And then next week, they go on the road against the Bears, which is another divisional rival. So in between two games against divisional rivals, they have to play an AFC team in Cleveland who presumably they're not going to take that seriously. I mean, nobody really takes Cleveland that seriously. And they're 12.5-point favourites.
I'm liking this angle a lot.
Yeah.
Well, and also,
this is the first sandwich game we've had this season.
We love a nice sandwich. They're playing in a game with a fairly lowish total for an NFL game of 44, where the 12.5, ought to be pretty valuable. If you just look at, how the game's liable to be played, well, we can appreciate that Cleveland are not very good. But, on offense, really, they're not terrible at running the ball. They're just not very good at passing, basically. They only get 5.4 yards a passing attempt, which makes them 29th in the league. And they have to pass a lot because, generally they're losing and they're chasing the game. Detroit, however, are they're not really brilliant either. They're a very poor running team, 30th in the league. They only get 3.2 yards a carry. And on defense, they're very good against the run, but they're not brilliant against the pass. In fact, they're not very good against the pass. Whereas Cleveland are also good against the run on defense. So I think both teams are going to be forced to try and pass a bit because both defenses are pretty good against the run. But on offense, I think although Cleveland are not very good at passing, they're playing against a not a particularly good defense against the pass. So I could really see, I just think there is a chance that they can score here. They're up against not a brilliant defense, as I say, and they may not be able to move the ball on the ground, but I think they can move it in the air. And I just think Detroit might not take them that seriously, and I think 12.5 is a lot of points. So, that will do for me. And I'm going to take the plus 12.5.
Plus 12.5. What price are we getting on that right now on Matchbook, Jesse?
Looks like 10 to 11.
Okay. He's made a convincing case. I can't believe we're going back in on the Browns again. But to be fair, Neil has made a convincing case. This is like all little bits of history repeating. 6:25 our time, the 0-8 Browns against the 4-4 Lions. We were going to talk about the Dallas Cowboys and the Atlanta Falcons. Thankfully, the Cowboys managed to spare my blushes. Yes, I'm going to put this on me and spare my blushes after that defensive howler that Jesse May is still needling me about. One of the worst plays in the history of the NFL, maybe in the history of sports, but they managed to come out of it and win the game anyway, so that's all right. We're going to skip that. It's going to be very interesting news about Ezekiel Elliott. We'll find out tomorrow, really, Thursday, if his suspension is going to be upheld or not. It looks as though they might manage to get this pushed to the summer, in which case Jerry Jones is a genius. But let's instead move on to Sunday Night Football. New England Patriots, the defending Super Bowl champions against the previous champions in 2016, the Denver Broncos. So, betting on Matchbook, Jesse.
I'm not that cruel, Emmett. I wouldn't. And Dallas is doing all right. Denver got pummeled last week, I believe, very publicly. And now they are 7.5, really, against New England.
6-2 Patriots, 3-5 Broncos. Tom Brady looking in his prime. Neil, I know you've got an interesting stat that took your... really caught your eye.
I had a trend. New England are off a bye. And I think we talked, I can't remember now, but I certainly wrote about it if we didn't talk about it. The other week, there was a bunch of teams off a bye and they all got smashed up in the market. And I just kind of thought, it just seemed like a bit of an overreaction. Like, it's not like the people setting the original market didn't know that there was they were coming off a bye. This is fairly commonly available information. But if you just look at teams off a bye that are on the road and favourite, New England are about a 7.5-point favourite in this game. They have an amazing record, actually. So this is road favourites off a bye since 2003, 54-28-2.
That's strong.
That's not bad, is it, against the spread? I thought that was pretty good. Also, if you take teams that just lost by 20 or more points the previous week, this is also since 2003, 385, 324, and 17. That's about a 54% clip, which will make you a profit, betting them blindly. I mean, that goes back to our old friend recency, doesn't it? It shows you that the market is not able to cope, or it's knocked out of whack because of people just wanting to bet against teams that looked terrible the week before. So that, just to repeat that, teams off a blowout of 20 or more points, so beaten by more 20 or more the previous week, 385, 324, and 17. I mean,
well, that's nice, but those are competing trends, so we're going to have to pass.
I don't know. I mean, I feel like this is a game where the public are all going to back New England, who open up a 7-point favorite. And where I was talking about the look ahead, the look ahead was 5.5 for this one. So you've got to feel like the market has already kind of got the fact already built into it that people just love New England. And I kind of feel like the professionals are going to have to back Denver here plus 7.5. But I don't know. I don't know whether I really can bring myself to do it. I mean, at the end of the day, they've just got such a terrible offense, haven't they? I mean, yeah. Defensively, they're brilliant against the run. They're pretty good against the pass. I don't know. New England just always find a way to score. And it does feel like this game's in for like sort of 47 points. I can't really see Denver scoring kind of, 27 against New England, really.
Well, it is, as Jesse May likes to say, the get-out game of the week. So if we're stuck... Perhaps.
We don't have to have a bet in every game, Emmett.
What are you talking about? Of course we do. No, we don't. Bet smarter with Matchbook. Right, that is our preview of the NFL Week 10. We're on to Week 10 already. It's incredible. Neil, we're going to chat to you again a little bit later on about the weekend's racing with Stephen Harris. But thanks so much for your company. And in terms of the NFL, we will chat to you again next week.
Thanks, Neil.
Football now on the Matchbook Betting Podcast. Welcome back to Matchbook's Mark Stitchcomb.
Good afternoon, Emmett.
Good to have you on board, my friend. We're going to preview the internationals and the World Cup qualifiers this week, some crucial games. Obviously, Ireland taking on Denmark is going to be a huge one. But you've singled out two games specifically to talk about and one other game for us to chat about a little bit later on as well, which is, well, Jesse and I both, normally you don't shock us, but both of us raised our eyebrows when you mentioned this third game. So we'll chat about that a little bit later on. But first of all, 7:45 Thursday night, Northern Ireland against Switzerland. The betting on Matchbook, Jesse.
Well, you don't see this too often. There's actually in the 1/2 market, there's a less than 100% book. That's a very tight market. It's 99.7%. But Switzerland, the favorite in this game, around 2.35 or so. The handicap is plus a quarter or so. So Switzerland's minus a quarter. The over-under is 1.75. And then there's also to qualify, because I guess, are they playing two legs? I think they are. Switzerland's a big favorite there, around 1.35 to qualify. Northern Ireland's 5-2, where you get slightly better, Mark.
So Michael O'Neill's done a fantastic job, obviously, with Northern Ireland, and they had a great Euros campaign. Do you expect them to continue this good run of form, or have they bumped into just too classy a team?
Yeah, I think Northern Ireland are a little bit underrated here. So just going back to the format of the playoffs, it's two legs with the return leg next week, and the away goals are used to differentiate if the ties are level after 180 minutes. I just think the goal quote of 1.75 just emphasizes how big a game this is for players nowadays. And, you know, the World Cup is an absolute pinnacle of a player's career. And I think all the pressure in these playoff matches is on the favourites. I don't think any of the underdogs have got anything to lose. Finishing second, a lot of them citing that's an achievement in itself. And we've already seen the likes of Chile, Holland, USA all miss out already. So I think this is a lot closer, I think, than the odds suggest. So in the group stages, Northern Ireland, they only conceded 6 goals in their 10 games. And you remember 2 of those were against Germany. They finished above both the Czech Republic and Norway, who I think are very similar in terms of ability to the Swiss. They beat both of those 2-0 at home. Obviously, as you already said, they had a great Euros last summer. They only narrowly lost to Germany and Poland. They managed to beat Ukraine to qualify. In the last qualifying campaign for those Euros, they won in Greece and Hungary, which again is just testament to how good a job Michael O'Neill is doing. Switzerland, I thought they were a little bit the beneficiaries of a rather easy group. And despite that, they only beat the Faroe Islands 2-0 in both games. Portugal actually beat them 11-1 over those two games, just to show the difference in quality there. They only beat Latvia 1-0. They only won 2-1 in Andorra. I don't think they're that good. I think their results and the sort of the goals they've amassed in their group sort of dwarf their abilities. Very similar sort of matches last summer at the Euros. They only managed to beat Albania, who had 10 men, 1-0. They only drew with 1-1 with Romania. And the fact they rely on the likes of Johan Giroud from the ex-Arsenal defender, and someone like Jamali, who's now applying his trade in the MLS. I also think they lack a decent striker. Just think there isn't a bigger gulf in terms of ability that the odds suggest. Northern Ireland, terrific match play team.
Mark, speaking of that, I mean, if I remember correctly, Northern Ireland were one of the best teams to be backing on the handicap during the last Euros. Did really well, I think, almost every match. Why are they still underrated? Or is this just sort of a consistent thing for this team?
It's a style thing, really. Basically, they're very well organised. If you kind of think similar to maybe a West Brom in terms of the Premier League, so I think we sort of talked about before the fact that West Brom odds are always fairly high because of the way they set up. They don't set up to attack, but they're very well organised. And Michael O'Neill has already said that the most important thing is we don't concede an away goal. So I think they'll be more than happy to draw this game 0-0 and then try and nick an away goal in Switzerland. And I think the best way to play this match or this tie, in fact, is to actually back Northern Ireland to qualify. It's around about 3 point. You can get 3.75 with some odds makers. So I think we can probably get up to an award sort of about 3.8 on them to qualify, and I honestly don't think that the gulf in ability is that big.
you're sounding confident on this one as well, Mark.
Yeah, I honestly, I mean, as soon as the draw was made, I thought that's a fantastic draw for Northern Ireland. Anyone that watches them or anyone knows anything about them is just knows how well organised they are. And honestly, you know, I say, if you just look at the goal expectancy, it's only 1.75. There aren't going to be goals in these two games at all. And I don't think it's that far-fetched that Northern Ireland, let's say, could draw this game 0-0 and then maybe draw 1-1 over in Switzerland and go through on the away goals rule.
Mark, if I remember correctly, Northern Ireland were one of the best teams to back in the last Euros. I think they must have, if you were backing them on the handicap, they might have covered every match. Why do they still continue to be undervalued?
Basically, it's a style thing, I think. They're not set up, or they don't set up to go and attack teams to try and outscore them. Very similar to West Brom in under Tony Pulis in the Premier League. And I think we've discussed them before by the fact that they'll never be overrated in the market. They're always going to be underrated because of just simply how they set up. But they're very well organised. And as I say, Michael O'Neill's already said the most important thing is we don't concede an away goal. So I think they'll just sit back. They're very potent from set pieces. They've got a couple of defenders from West Brom, Johnny Evans and Gareth McCauley. McCauley actually scored a couple of goals last summer at the Euros. And they've got Chris Brunt, obviously another West Brom player. So yeah, I think there's a lot of parallels with West Brom if you were looking to compare a club team to them.
Michael O'Neill has done a fantastic job, and it would be great to see him extend that record. Also, any excuse to use the chant, even if he's not playing, Will Griggs on fire has to be taken. So Northern Ireland to qualify is the play for Thursday's game on Matchbook. Friday, 7:45, Sweden against Italy. Jesse May, the betting on Matchbook.
The Swedes are around 5-2 in the 1-by-2. Italy the favorite there. 2.5, 6-4. So handicap sees Italy minus a quarter. Again, a low over-under total of 2. And the 2 qualify market sees Italy about the same price to qualify against Sweden as Switzerland are against Ireland in the 1.35 range.
Quick clarification against Northern Ireland. Ireland play against Denmark. Just a quick clarification, Jesse May.
You know me.
I rarely have to correct you, but, you know, just on this occasion.
That is going to be some game as well, by the way.
Oh, it's going to be a cracker.
Let's hear about Sweden-Italy.
Yeah, it's going to be brilliant. Yeah, so Sweden-Italy, Italian football is very much on the way back. The Champions League teams are looking interesting. Napoli seem to be a free-scoring side, but internationally, are they still of the standard that their reputation merits?
So I'm looking to oppose Italy here. Their manager, Gianpiero Ventura, he's under massive pressure. That both their results and their performances are pretty underwhelming. They played against Spain in the summer and they lost 3-0, but it wasn't so much a result. He set up in a 4-2-4 and it was just catastrophic. He just completely played right into Spain's hands. And since then, they've only beaten Israel 1-0. They've drawn 1-1 in Macedonia and only beaten Albania 1-0. And he just seems to have completely lost the dressing room. The players had a private meeting after one of the matches without the manager to discuss the way forward. In his last game, he set up 3-4-3, but he doesn't know what his best formation or team is. He's called up 27 players to these playoffs because, as I say, he just doesn't know what the best setup is to be. He's given in to public pressure by picking a Napoli player, Jorginho, who's actually Brazilian. I'm a little bit confused, really, how he actually got the job. I mean, his best achievement is only ever winning Serie C1, so the Italian third division. That was back in 1996, so that's well over 20 years ago. And I think Sweden are a good side to get with in terms of opposing Italy. They scored the most goals in qualifying of any of the teams that made the playoffs. They had Luxembourg and Belarus in their group, but Italy had Liechtenstein and Macedonia. And I think that's really impressive considering Ibrahimovic retired after the Euros last year. Sweden have already beaten France and Portugal. They actually won in Portugal as well. And in the away tie against France, they were actually winning. They've got a couple of good players in Emil Forsberg and Lindelof that's recently moved to Man United. But it's a little bit more about the collective for Sweden. And I think as a team, they're very much in with a chance of getting past Italy here, who really don't know what how they're going to line up, how they're going to even approach this game. And as Jesse said, in terms of the goals, again, the very low goal quote here of 2.0. So it's gonna be a very tight game, as those odds suggest. And I think that the best route is to back Sweden to qualify at nearly 4.0. I think that's a really, really good bet.
I'm liking this. I'm liking the confidence in both bets as well. There's also the fact that this is a double chance to win, really, because theoretically one of the teams could lose or draw the first leg, but still end up qualifying. So I'm...
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I think, again, these match odds and goal expectancy, I think they're pretty much spot on. And I think it basically the market is anticipating two low scoring first legs. And then the fact that the favourites are going to have home advantage in the second leg, but that completely sort of dismisses the away goals. If Sweden and Northern Ireland or one of the two can get to the second leg without conceding a goal, I think their chances absolutely soar. And just a quick one actually, I noticed ESPN's Soccer Power Index ratings, which seem to be within the sort of football community, not so much the betting community, sort of well respected. They've got Italy as a 57% chance of qualifying, which is odds of 1.75, and they've got Switzerland at 61%, which is 1.62.
Ooh.
Which I thought was really interesting, considering the fact that that's a massive disparity in terms of the betting angle. So I thought that was something worth bringing up.
Yeah, and before you said it, I was going to say that's something that's becoming more and more credible and something that's more and more interesting, as you said, not necessarily in the betting world.
I think you made strong arguments for both of those. Yeah. I mean, they sound like two excellent 11-4 shots. Wow.
Yeah, spoiler alert, I think they're going to be charity bets for the weekend. I have a sneaking suspicion. I wonder, though, and you're just going to briefly touch on this game. I wonder, is this going to sneak in, though, as a charity bet? Of all the games that you could mention this weekend on the Matchbook Betting Podcast, the place to go to for the best information in football bets, you choose New Zealand versus Peru, which is on at some insane time on Saturday morning. So the first question I have to ask is, Jesse May, what price are we getting on these two teams? And then I want to find out, why is it that Mark wants to talk about this?
Well, it is a World Cup qualifier. So Peru, one of these teams might be there, Peru or New Zealand. Peru's minus a half a goal in the handicap, over under 2.25. You know, and there is a market here on Matchbook.
So we're well used to staying up late at night to watch Sunday night football, Monday night football in the NFL. You've already told us off air, we don't need to stay up for this game. We'll just wake up in the morning and get the winner. So what's the winner going to be?
So basically, Peru, in the last qualification game, when there was about four different teams that could have qualified from South America, Argentina were one of those that were in trouble, and Lionel Messi obviously did what he did and got the hat-trick to send them through. But Peru, the way the results played out, they managed to equalise against Colombia with about 10 minutes to go. And they realised that if the scores all stayed the same, that the team that were going out were Chile, and Chile were losing 2-0 in Brazil. So that was going to take a massive comeback to turn that around. Essentially, they were going to go into the playoffs, and they settled for that. They stopped attacking. Colombia stopped attacking as well, because that was enough for them to qualify. There was actually a video of Falcao wandering around both teams telling them that a draw was enough. So I kind of feel here that Peru have shown somewhat of an arrogance to accept that it's better to play New Zealand over two legs than to have attacked against Colombia with 10 minutes to go. And also, it has backfired on them that their captain and record scorer, Paulo Guerrero, has failed a drugs test, and he's going to miss both of these legs. Without going into too much depth, New Zealand are terrible. I don't think they're very good. But I do think there could be a case here of Peru basically thinking this is a cakewalk, and it could come back to bite them. I'm thinking of a very small bet on New Zealand to qualify, upwards of nearly 8.0.
First of all, the 8.0 makes both Jesse and I go, and again, raised eyebrows. Second of all, this Peru story is like a really bad soap opera. You've got failed drug tests, essentially non-trying in a football match. This is extraordinary. Let's see how that plays out. in the wee small hours. Well, we're not going to. We're just going to wake up to, hopefully, as Mark said, before we recorded, to a winner on Saturday.
Well, it'll be the first leg, so then we've still got the second leg to come.
You had to go and spoil it, didn't you? Just to be accurate, but you are right. Of course, that's factual. All right, Mark, listen, some fantastic insight for the internationals this weekend. Hopefully, you've picked out some winners for us. You're very confident about the first two. That third story is just well worth talking about, and we will chat to you again next week. You can read more content from Mark on insights.matchbook.com. Mark, we'll chat to you again next week.
That's right, and hopefully next week I'm going to be discussing the World Cup outright market once we know the 32 teams that have all qualified.
Excellent. And hopefully Northern Ireland and Ireland will be part of that. Remember, Jesse, there are two different teams. chat to you again next week, my friend.
Cheers, Emmett. Cheers, Jesse.
Cheers. Thanks, Mark. Nice stuff.
Sports Racing now on the Matchbook Betting Podcast. It's welcome back to Mr. Neil Channing, who was on with us for the NFL earlier on. Welcome back, Neil.
Oh, hello again. Yes.
And from betting expert, it is our regular racing expert, Mr. Stephen Harris.
Hi, chaps.
Now, we had a bit of a go at Neil Channing last week, both Jesse and I. We kind of ganged up on him. Well, Jesse, first of all, pounced, and then I pounced right in behind him when Neil produced a bet for the Breeders' Cup, and Jesse said, and what's the sectional times on this horse? What kind of workouts has he been doing in the morning? And Neil just was like, turns out, though, you don't need that information if you just nail a winner of the Breeders' Cup Sprint 5-1.
To be honest with you, when I was talking the week before last with Dirt Track Dan, he told me that under no circumstances was I to give you the split times that animal had been running in the mornings leading up to the race. And I was getting regular texts from Clocker's Corner, but sometimes you have to keep these things stum. I was able to tell you
BTD
that it was a
that.
Good thing and to lump on at the prices. I mean, what else do you need to know?
Fantastic.
Apparently, I need to, need to just be told to do things and not to think. That was my problem was trying to think.
That has often been the problem. Yeah,
it is the problem. Combine that with me ever assuming that to doubt a good horse tip from you. That's I don't even know what I was.
It's all right.
Not make me hurt. Feel better and tell me you did get on.
Of course I did.
And I hope some of our listeners did too.
Yeah, hopefully.
And never in doubt, was it?
It was pretty impressive, actually.
Yeah, no, he did it really well. To be fair, Jesse, you did say last week, normally I just say, hey, Neil, what are you backing? And then I just blindly follow him in. So hopefully you did as well Saturday night, as Roy H. Did the job for us. Twitter went wild as well. So nicely done, Neil. Let's see if we can continue that good run of form as we look at one of the most competitive races of the entire season, which is convenient seeing as the flat season is just about to end. It's going to be live on At The Races and on ITV4 from Doncaster at 3:15. It's the November handicap, one of the most prestigious handicaps of the season in racing. What is the current betting on Matchbook, Jesse?
Royal Line. Looking at around 9-1. Or 8-1 even. Duke of Bronte co-headlining along with Dance the Dream. Boy, this looks like a wide open race.
Yeah, absolutely. It usually is, to be fair. Although, Stephen, every now and again, you get a really strong favorite coming into this race. As Jesse just said, this is a really wide open one. And the horse he mentioned first, one of the co-favorites, Royal Line, is going to be ridden by William Buick, who's just celebrating his first Breeders' Cup winner on Wahida last weekend for John Gosden, who's enjoyed a tremendous season. Led by stable stars Enable and Cracksman, can he round off the campaign with a big handicap win, or are you looking for something with a bit more value?
Well, the short answer, I think, is probably yes, Emmett. Last week, we latched onto Anthony on the podcast. I think we had a 10-1 or an 11-1, Jesse. It went off 9-2, putting on at the finish on a Saturday. But
I saw that. That was a huge mover.
Yeah, but as I said to my bank manager, and I think the story actually is it. You were shouting through the letterbox at the bailiffs that you had some terrific value. But you can't eat value. But he didn't jump well enough and faded out of things. He's actually about the only horse Gary Moore's trained in the last few weeks that hasn't won, I think. But hopefully we'll get a bit warmer on Saturday. As Emmett said, it's a really, really hard race. It looks about 10 the field on the exchanges, but I've found two that look like they're definitely going to run. Obviously, we're recording this on Wednesday, so there's currently 38 runners in the field. But the two we're going to hopefully back, look like they're going to run. They've both got jockeys on them. Everything looks ideal. The soft grounds come right for both of them. So we start with Royal Line. I think he's very fair at about nine. He's got the potential to be a bit better than a handicapper, I think. He only started running in September. He's John Gosden trained three-year-old. He was sent to Windsor and smashed off the boards from odds against down to 4-6 and was workmanlike in landing the odds. He was then hammered again in the market at Haydock on his handicap debut in really bad attritional ground and won quite nicely. Now, his only defeat came last time at Newbury when he finished last of three. I think, first of all, that was a very warm race, even though there was only three runners. And secondly, it was tactical and muddling. And he got in a war with a Mark Johnson horse called Time to Study from about four furlongs out. And to put it politely, I don't think it was Frankie Dettori's finest hour. He ended up having a bit of a hard race and got tired late on.
Last of three, that sounds like a coursing race.
Yeah, I mean, it was a disappointing. He was sent off odds on again. And I think his market strength is probably a clue that the stable think he's still well ahead of his mark. And he's 8-1, 9-1. He is that sort of Saturday horse I could easily see starting 4-1 favourite on the day, with the stable still flying, soft ground to suit. He's completely unexposed. And basically, I think he's one of those horses I'd say to sort of matchbook listeners that he's a good exchange horse. You could easily have yourself a 10-1 now, and you might find you'll be able to come out at 5-1 on the day and have a free bet. That's the favourite. And the one I thought you had to save on at least, or back as well, double figure price, is Alan King's Top Tug. Now, this is another stable absolutely flying on the jumps. Everything he's running is winning or running well. And at this time of the flat season, I think you've got to stick with yards that are flying. It's been the end of a long year. This one's a six-year-old. He's pretty exposed, but he comes from a good race at Leicester, won by Dance the Dream, who's actually one of the favourites for this race. I watched that race back again this morning, and things didn't pan out ideally for him. There's only about seven or eight runners. He's a very strong, travelling, smooth-going sort of horse who's got one burst, really. He doesn't want to be in front too long. And he never landed a blow at Leicester. Now, this is going to be a 20-odd runner handicap. They're going to go a proper gallop in soft ground. And I can see him cruising out the back and coming through late. And I think he's about 12 on Matchbook at the minute. And I think that's over the odds as well. So they'd be my two.
Sounds very good to me. I'm going to make a prediction here that Neil Channing is going to put up, I'm thinking, maybe it might be Tony Bloom's horse.
Oh, no. I'm not going to have a bet at this stage. I mean, I quite like the case you made for Royal Line. I actually backed that last time, and I agree. It was a bit of a funny ride. And, I can see what you're saying in terms of that being something that could get smashed off the boards. The other one I sort of was looking at was Saunter, but I don't know whether I want to make a strong case for that at this stage of the week. I guess I wouldn't put you off Royal Line if you're having a bet, but I'm certainly not getting involved on a Wednesday.
Royal Line, a son of Dubawi, carrying the very famous Sheikh Mohammed Silks. And as Stephen has said, it's a horse with a big reputation, two wins already. And yeah, you just get the impression that with the market price as he is now, they're expecting big things. That is our preview for the weekend's racing. We're taking a look at the November handicap, and hopefully Stephen Harris has nailed the winner for us. Lads, we will chat to you both again next week.
Thanks, guys.
Cheers. Good luck.
I gotta say, I always love the November handicap. I'm looking forward to having a bet in that race over the weekend. Right. Brought together by their shared views on maximizing expected value, Matchbook have partnered with Reg, Raising for Effective Giving. They're the charity of choice for many professional poker players. They use science and rational decision-making to maximize expected value when helping to reduce suffering in the world. They are an incredibly worthy and deserving cause. Now, last week, we've already alluded to this, we smashed it. The experts were on top form on the Matchbook Betting Podcast. So very generously, Matchbook gave us a £5,000 betting account at the start of season two of the podcast. The idea being that the entire amount will be donated to the Reg charity at the end of the season. After last week's winnings, how are we currently standing, Jesse May?
We have £4,443. So still a little bit below where we started up, but I think we made about 450 pounds last week. And that wasn't even counting what we could have made. Gosh, if we had backed Roy H. But onward and upward.
Absolutely. So let's start with the NFL. Neil made a I can't believe I'm saying this, a convincing case for backing the Cleveland Browns. Are you following him in for the charity?
Absolutely. We're going to post up an offer at Cleveland plus 12 and a half for 130 pounds. In the soccer, the World Cup qualifiers, going to post up at 3.7 or 3.78, I think it is, around that for Northern Ireland to beat Switzerland to qualify, and another 100 on Sweden to qualify against Italy. Going to try and post up there around 3.85 or so.
Are we skipping Peru, New Zealand?
Yeah, I think I'm going to pass on that. Who knows what could happen at 3 o'clock in the morning, right? But no, that didn't sound as compelling to me.
No.
And then in that November handicap, let's put 100 on the line on the Royal line at 9.0. I'm going to check that out on Saturday near to post time, Emmett. And if it has indeed closed to like 5 to 1 or so, like Anthony did, then I think we may try and free roll to get out of it, lay off a little bit.
I really like that idea because it's a very competitive race. But as Stephen was saying, he's the kind of horse that the public could latch onto because he's an unexposed horse. There's obviously a big reputation for him in the scheme of things. It's not like anyone thinks he's going to be a cracksman, but given his stature in the market, they obviously think something of him at John Gosden's Yard. And you can see him being the kind of horse that just the public latch onto really on Saturday. So I think if we can get the value and then close out, lock in the profit, I would be absolutely in favor of that. All right, that's it. Our comprehensive preview of the best bets for the NFL football and horse racing, the November handicap over the weekend. Best of luck if you're following us in. Hopefully it'll be as successful as last weekend, although that's a lofty target, but hopefully we can get there. If you like the show, tell all your friends. Tell your family, tell your colleagues, spread the word about it and give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. It just helps us spread the word about the show and it would be much, much appreciated. From Jesse May, Neil Channing, Mark Stitchcomb, Stephen Harris and myself, Emmett Kennedy, thank you so much for listening to the Matchbook Betting Podcast. We'll talk to you again next week. God bless.